How many of us, including myself, has entered the sanctuary this morning convinced that God can say nothing to us, nothing to me, nothing to anyone? We're going to come and we're going to go through the routine. We're going to do what comes naturally to us and we'll leave. And we will leave just as we came, convinced that God has said nothing and has nothing to say to us. I believe that there is something about the interference of God that contradicts that. And this is seen in the text that has been chosen for this morning. In Exodus chapter 3, we find Moses doing what came natural to him. And I call this the pattern of God's interference. The pattern of God's interference. How does God interfere in a life? We see this in Moses, what I call spiritual complacency. Follow me, please. In verse 1, it says that Moses kept his father's flock. He did what was natural. Moses led his father-in-law's flock. He led them. He kept them. He fed them. He led them. Moses went to the backside of the desert. He did this for almost 40 years. He knew everything that was to be known about what was in that location. He had been there, if you please. The phrase is, been there, done that. He knew it all. He could almost do his chores with his eyes closed. It meant absolutely nothing to him because he knew what was to come next. And Moses had become so absolutely complacent in the text here that he went from day to day expecting nothing unique to happen to him, nothing out of the ordinary. He was going to do what he has always done, and he will leave at the end of the day with the same conclusions that he has started the day with. Think of it, dear friends. You and I are used to coming to church at 11 o'clock Sunday morning. We know, as it were, that we're going to sing hymns. We know, as it were, that we are going to read the scriptures. We almost know what to expect. We know the hymns. We know the Bible stories. We even know some of the scriptures. But that has become such a matter of fact with us. We are so used to it. We know what's coming. I learned to memorize in the King James translation because that was really all that they had during my day. The New American Standard was just coming out in the middle of my sophomore year in school, the first school I attended. And so right now, I might be reading the scriptures, and I'm reading the New American Standard Version. And instead of reading what the text says, because I'm so used to the King James, guess what? I am reading King James' words. You see, I've become familiar with the text. I've become so complacent that the text says absolutely nothing to me anymore. It is simply there as something I'm used to. And before too long, spiritual atrophy sets in. We sit through a service. We sit through a Bible study. We are able to repeat the text. We're able to find where it's located. We know the language. But somehow something troubles us within. For in spite of all that knowledge, nothing is happening to my heart. Nothing is happening to my mind. I'm not being changed. God is not real. The routine is there, but the reality is absent. Like Moses, we go through the leading, the feeding, and we do it, but it has absolutely nothing to us. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 14 says, the church had gone to sleep. And the word came, awake thou that sleepest, and God will give thee light. God had to interfere with the atrophy of the church to awake it out of its sleeping by shouting to it, by causing experiences to come that shook the church up, as it were. This happened in Acts chapter 8. The church had become ingrown. It had lost its sense of mission. It had lost its sense of vision. And God caused a persecution to come into the church to scatter them abroad that they might do what he had called them to do in the first place. May I suggest to you, my dear friends, that this pattern is throughout the Old and the New Testaments and also in the experience of the church and your personal experience and mine, that when we become complacent in our Christian life, God has to interfere. He has a right to do so. In Luke chapter 5, Peter and John had done their fishing, and they had caught nothing. And they were putting their nets together, and Jesus showed up into their lives, unannounced. And he said, "Push out into the deep." And Peter said, "We have done this all night, and we have caught nothing." Been there, done that. How can you tell us to go? We have been there. You see, they didn't expect anything to happen. Once they didn't catch anything, nothing else could take place until tomorrow morning. The next morning they go fishing. I ask the question, my friends, what will God have to do to wake us up, to interfere with our lives? The life that no longer sees prayer as necessary, the life that no longer sees the reading of the scriptures as something that is useful for that individual, the life that no longer sees fellowship with other Christians as being essential, the life that no longer sees spiritual growth as a part of the routine of God. Spiritual complacency. I wonder if I'm speaking to someone who is saying, "That's where I am this morning. I know the verses, I know the hymns, I know the choruses, but they mean nothing to me. I've been there. I sing them. I'm able to mouth the words, but they don't mean anything. I come to church and I don't expect God to say anything to me, and I leave and my prophecy is fulfilled." Spiritual complacency is a pattern of God's interference. Whenever we get to that place, my friends, God has designed to shake us up one way or another, and he has. But I want to say something else. In the pattern of divine interference, I see not only spiritual complacency as where God interferes, but I see what I call God suddenly appearing and very confusing. Very suddenly and very confusing. Look again in our text. "And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of the bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, yet the bush was not consumed." Moses was going about his routine day by day. Excuse me. Oh my. I can't leave you out of this secret. I hope I don't embarrass anybody. But I'm preaching here, and all of a sudden I look down, and this is what's there. Oh, this was supposed to be a children's story. All right. Whew. It's better than a big clock, I guess. But, suddenly and confusing. I see this as a pattern. In Joshua chapter 5, verses 13 to 15, Joshua is walking in the cool of the morning. All of a sudden, he sees someone appearing before him, and he shouts, "Are you for us or against us?" And he says, "Neither. I am come as captain of the host of the Lord." Suddenly and confusing. I see this also, my friends, in Judges chapter 6. Gideon is in hiding. Spiritual atrophy had set in the book of Judges. Spiritual complacency. And Gideon is in hiding, and God comes to him and says, "Hail, mighty man of valor." He says, "Me? You can't be speaking to me." So suddenly and confusing. I think the same thing is true with Peter, as I repeated before. He's mending his net, he's taking care of his net, and all of a sudden, Jesus, unannounced, comes on his boat and says, "Launch out into the deep," suddenly and confusing. Let me suggest to you, my friends, that there's a pattern here. And the pattern is this, that God, if he is God, and if the church belongs to him, God does not ask permission for entrance. He comes as he wills. in his time, he comes, and he actually comes in not to bargain with us, but to uproot us from our complacency into a life of reality and responsiveness. This is what he was going to do with Moses. Moses had no idea that he would go back to Egypt. All he wanted to do was to make sure that Pharaoh didn't get to him. And he went through the routine without any concern for a sense of mission. And so we see the routine, the pattern, is God comes suddenly and confusing. If this is of God, how can this be? You know, I read in the book of Judges that when Samson began to act in a way that he wasn't supposed to, I read that the Lord was in it. The Lord was in it. Thirdly, the spiritual condition. I know thy sorrows, verse 7. God is not indifferent to the happenings in our lives. When we are going through difficulties, we always wonder if something is wrong with us, if God is displeased with us. And friends, listen. The interference of God is the invitation of God to go beyond. The interference of God is the invitation of God to go beyond. When he said to Peter, launch out into the deep, he's saying, go beyond where you have gone. When he came to Moses, as confusing as it was, he said, I want to send you on a mission. He was content to be there, cloistered in that mountain by himself, enjoying what he could out of life without having any sense of reality and mission. But God knows. In preparing for this message this morning, I came across something very interesting. Whenever there are clouds in your life and mine, I know in my life, whenever there are clouds, we think of sadness, of sorrow, of difficulty, and all the other things, the negative things that clouds seem to present. Whenever there's a big cloud, it's going to rain, and my parade will be rained on. But you know what I discovered? Just a few texts for you. Clouds are not a sign of God's absence. Clouds are a sign of God's presence. Let me give you some text. Exodus chapter 13, verse 21. And the Lord went before them in a pillar of cloud. In all the difficulties of the wilderness, the cloud that they saw was a representation, a reminder that God is there. Leviticus chapter 16, verse 2. I will appear in the cloud upon the mercy seat. I love that. The mercy seat, my friends, is what you and I need when we have a sense of failure before God. And yet it is at that place the cloud arises, not to say that God is distant from us, but that God is near. I will appear in the cloud over the mercy seat. Perhaps the most famous cloud of all is the cloud found in Luke chapter 9, verses 34 and 35, the Mount of Transfiguration. The disciples were caught up in a cloud, frightened as ever. And out of that cloud came a voice that says, this is my beloved Son. Hear him. Clouds are not a sign of God's displeasure. It's a sign, my friends, of the reminder of God's presence. And in the midst of the clouds of this present minute, this present hour, I beg of you to understand that God is not absenting himself from us. He's making us know that he's here. I know thy sorrows. I know your pain. I know your difficulty. I know your heartache. I know your disappointment. As much as we cannot put our hands in the direction of God's location, yet, my friends, by faith, we know he has promised that his clouds are a sign of his presence. Quickly, the purpose of divine interference. Why does God interfere in our lives? I could say because he loves us. That might be true. And that is true. But I have three things that I've gleaned from this text as to why God interferes in lives. And right through the Old Testament, it is seen as well as in the New. First of all, the first purpose that I see out of this text as to why God interferes in our lives is to return our spiritual passion. to return our spiritual passion. Verse 3, Moses went day by day. He saw everything that was to be seen there. Nothing affected him at all. And all of a sudden there appears to him a bush that is on fire, but it is not being consumed. And listen to what he says. I will now turn aside and see. God's interference became God's invitation. God's interference became God's challenge. Psalm 119, verses 67 and 71. Before I was afflicted, I went astray, but now I delight in your word. Before I was afflicted, the affliction of God was not the displeasure of God, it was the invitation to restore spiritual passion. My routine, my friends, might be interrupted by God. My routine, if you please, not might be, speaking personally, has been interrupted by God. And if ever in my life I am learning what it is to trust in the Lord with all my heart and not to lean to my own understanding, to acknowledge Him in all my ways, it is now. It is now. Because you see, my friends, there are experiences that are unexplainable in our lives, in our church. But the reason for that, my friends, is that somehow I believe God wants to restore our spiritual passion. God wants this book to take on meaning to us again. God wants us, my friends, when there's a call for prayer, that it is seen as a genuine conviction that the answer lies with God and with none other. That's the passion He wants to restore. He wants you and me to say again, Lord, lay some soul upon my heart and win that soul through me. We've lost our passion. And the interference of God is His invitation to restore our spiritual passion. We come to God, we turn aside from whatever it might cost us. Whatever it might cost us. Because remember, friends, even though the burning bush is there, it is not until Moses turned aside to see that God speaks. It was when he turned aside. It was when he said, this is something that demands my attention, that God spoke to him what it was all about. And the spiritual passion is restored when we're willing to make whatever sacrifice is necessary for God to once again become real in our lives. That we can sing hymns and choruses with a sense of conviction and joy, whether we close our eyes or raise our hands or any kind of gesture from without. The reality comes from within. Return our spiritual passion. I will now turn aside. Restore His sovereign presence. To restore His sovereign presence. Verses 6 and 12. Listen to what God says. I am the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob. What was He saying to God, to Moses? Moses, Abraham knew my presence. He heard me. He worshipped me to the place where he was willing to give up his son because I was so real in his life. Isaac knew my presence. You look in the Old Testament and you hardly see a place where Isaac gets into any kind of trouble at all. He's one of the unique individuals. But he's saying that the reason Isaac was able to so live was because of the presence of God. I am the God of Isaac. Of Jacob. Jacob was the man who failed, who was a swindler. But he met God and God changed his name from Jacob to Israel, someone who prevails with God. And Moses, as I was with them, I want to be with you. I want my presence to be real to you as it was real to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob. My dear friends, I say this. Someone may have presented a wrong picture of God to you. And that picture is stopping you from going to God. Listen this morning. You are here because God wants you to turn from the ordinary to hear what His Word is saying about the reality of His presence. I was at the Spiritual Life Convention meeting this past week, and when I go to these meetings with these Scottish men, I tell you what stories. But this is a real one, and it has, my friends, significance. My good friend, Arthur, said this man was presenting in the church where he was or where he was acquainted. They had the communion set up, all everything down there, but it was the practice of the minister to hold up a chalice and to say, "The blood of Christ, which was sacrificed for the sins of the world, we partake of that to proclaim the completion of His redemptive work." Then they would distribute the rest of the things. As he put his hand and lift the trays, he noticed that they were all empty. Every one of them empty. And he leaned over to the leading elder and said, "Fake it." He leaned over to the other one that was there and said, "Fake it." And it went right through the entire communion service. People whispering to others, "Fake it. Fake it." Do you get the lesson, friends? Is it possible that week after week after week, we're faking it? That there is no reality? That God is as far away from me here as He is at a basketball game? Faking it. I'm not accusing anyone. God forbid. It's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer. But my friends, the challenge comes to us that when God interferes, it becomes His invitation to restore our spiritual passion and to return His presence to His people. Lastly, to reveal His sacred program. Exodus chapter 3, verses 9 and 10. Listen to it. "And behold, the cry of the sons of Israel has come to me. Furthermore, I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians are oppressing them." God knows what we're going through. But listen to His purpose. "Therefore now I have come, and I will send you to Pharaoh so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt." Here is God's sacred program. His presence, my friends, leads to His program. His presence leads to His program. In Mark chapter 3, verse 14, Jesus invited the 12 that they might be with Him and that He might send them out. That they might be with Him and that He will send them out. The presence of God leads to the proclamation of God. No congregation, my friends, that has recaptured their spiritual passion, no congregation that knows what it is to enjoy His presence, can sit down week after week without being motivated to invite others to enjoy the same. Yeah, I call it the sacred program because it comes from God. It is not manipulated by man. God's people are in the world to bear witness to His world, to the world. We are to live among ourselves in such a way that Christ is revealed to an unbelieving world through the church. The ministry depends upon every believer then, living a life that is real before God. We are to use all that we have in order, verse 12, in order. "Suddenly I will be with you, and this shall be a sign to you. It is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God." The end result of proclamation is to see men and women, boys and girls, coming into God's house to worship God. They become disciples, and we equip them to go out and to bring others And the process continues until Jesus Christ comes again. May I close, my friends, with the one thought that I leave with you this morning. The interference of God is God's invitation to go beyond the routine. And this morning, as we come to our song number 445, I wonder if this morning there are those who, like the communion service, have been faking it, and they are sick and tired of faking it, and today they want God to begin the process of renewing their spiritual passion. It is an invitation of such as such, but my friends, I will put pressure on no one. If God has spoken to you about the loss of spiritual passion and the need to restore it, as we sing this song, "Have Thine Own Way, Lord, Have Thine Own Way," I invite you to come and to come and stand, and we will pray with you. And we will only pray with you because we stand with you, not to judge you. If God has spoken, turn aside from everything else and come and see this strange thing and renew your spiritual passion.